Welcome to What's Love Got to Do with It? A short series of podcasts exploring the role of love in professional education, health, and social care settings. Love means many things to different people, and the meaning of it is hard to pin down. So we've gathered a diverse team that offer a range of responses to the topic to consider the meaning, uses, and effects of love in professional care. So let's begin by listening to the professionals talk about the meaning of being loving in their work and what that looks, sounds, and feels like in practice. Here's Lionel Roth, the husband of Alex Cohen, a disability and long-term conditions educator and activist.
The words care and compassion and dignity and respect can sometimes become meaningless. They're taglines on a website, and they are universally professed behaviours and qualities that everybody says we have. And I really can associate, I can really recognise, especially when the word professionalism is invoked, and how in some ways being professional diminishes the love. And I think the connector there is about vulnerability. And I think one of the things about love is that you open yourself up to both the joy of love, but also the potential dangers from it, including being vulnerable to those dangers. And I think that when people use compassion, dignity, and respect as lip service, and you can tell that there's no light behind the eyes when those words are used. I think that what I like about possibly what the idea of saying what's love got to do with it, I can see something good in that as a kickstarter to a conversation. So is the love and the openness and the danger and the vulnerability in that we know is in love, is that there anymore in your compassion, in your respectful behavior? You know, because I think that if you can model some of that using love as the flag or the motivator, you can trickle that down into these much safer but still terribly important words to make them real again. There might be a way of circling around and using the idea of love to regenerate a reality around the concepts that we were saying we would prefer.
So, what does this joyful yet dangerous thing called love mean to you? I'd like to invite you just to take a moment to think of what three words come to mind when you think of being loving at work. Write them down if you can, or make a mental note. Now let's see what words our team of experts come up with.
So to be compassionate, to be kind to someone, you know, like, and also being empathetic, to understand someone, will be a different ways of showing love in a nursing profession.
So for sure, the three words that I believe show love as a support worker, the main one has to be care, of course. Care, understanding, and patience.
The three words that I can think of are family, friendship, and understanding.
I would say that it's three things: respect, dignity, and warmth. And of course, then it fits for working both with the adults who work in the school and the adults who are family members, and also with the children and young people themselves.
Okay, the three words that I associate with being loving in my work would be empathy, t- touch and listening.
The three words that would describe the type of love that I give the women is it's care. So it's clinical care. Through the care that I give, I'm keeping them safe. So secondly, to listen, communication, to give women the information, to communicate well with them and to listen to what they want, but also to guide them. So communication, care, communication. I sound like the six C's from the NHS, don't I? Well, I suppose, yeah, I think it is compassion. Empathy, compassion.
Being loving in my work, it's about time, it's about compassion, and it's about curiosity. I suppose. I don't know if that's the three words that I would have come up with yesterday, but that's the three words I'm coming up with today.
So we've heard some of the words that came to mind to some of our professionals when thinking about being loving at work. I wonder how similar or different these words were to the ones that came to your mind when thinking about being loving in your work. At the moment, we've just got a list of words that could easily end up as taglines on websites or meaningless buzzwords on promotional materials. So let's take the time to really think about what these words look, sound, and feel like in practice. Before we listen to some concrete examples of what being loving might look, I'd like to invite you to notice how you feel as you listen to them. We are social animals, bound together by our capacity for empathy. When we see or even hear of a loving act, we tend to in some way feel some of the love that is given and received in that act of love. Our emotional worlds are intermingled with one another. So if we can be fully present for these examples and notice the feelings that they trigger when people tell us their stories, we actually water the seeds of love and empathy in ourselves. So let's begin with Vandana Iqbal, Assistant Director of Nursing at Clonsky Community Nursing Home, Dublin.
Okay. The recent, a very, very recent example of this is that one of our residents, he likes to drink his coffee in a very, very large mug, extremely gigantic mug. And somehow he misplaced it. So he goes around the whole building. He walks around. He does all the things. So somewhere he actually misplaced his mug. So he was very sad. So one of the healthcare assistants went out and searched for an extra large mug, but brought two mugs back. And they have given him one and they have hid another one. So they said, look, he is so happy and he's so content when he has his mug. But they have a backup plan. So a healthcare worker didn't have to do that, you know, but they demonstrated that how important for them this resident was and his needs were, that they actually went over and beyond to do that.
I have experienced loads of little nuggets of memories that I will never forget with the people that I support.
Laura Clavier, a support worker for children and adults with multiple disabilities from London.
One of the examples, I support a man with autism. He's got severe autism. I noticed that he gets really anxious, and most of the people that have supported him don't really show a sense of friendship with him. They just see it as, I'm here to work. So I thought, okay, let me be very quiet. Let me give eye contact. And I experimented. I said, let me invade his personal space and see what happens, but while being very calm. And he just mimicked me. And since then, it's showed to calm him down. It showed to relax him a bit. And yeah, grow a bond. There's a sense of intimacy, a friendship that we have, and the way that we show this is we will both lean into each other and pause and then lean back out. It really de-stresses him, and you can sense the friendship between us.
Here's Joe, a dementia care worker.
There is days where it is hard because it's not always loving and perfect. There's days where I'm thinking, oh, what's going on? My best family member is hitting me. But at the end of the day, I think, oh, they've got dementia. They love me, but they can't remember loving me. So I have to love them for them to remember, oh, I actually love that person. I actually love her. So I'm going to try not hit her today. Mm. It's just difficult like that. Really, like when I first started in working in a care, I never worked before. My first job was 8 years. The first experience I ever had was a lady telling me I was dirty. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? She went, oh, your legs are black. I'm like, oh, that's just the color of my legs. She went, oh, have you tried bleach? It was just, and then I came back the next day. I was like, oh, I've tried bleach. That's just it. It's not going away. She just laughs and say, oh, well, we'll see what we can do about then that then. You're just making those little connections. It makes it eat that if I had just given up the day before, I'd be like, oh, she's just telling me I'm black. I know I'm black. But I came back and I said, oh, I tried what you said, but it didn't actually work. So what can we do to make it better now? We have to find the easiest way to make connections anyways, because they can't always remember what we're talking about. But if I felt like she felt really upset about it, so I came back the next day. I was like, oh, I tried what you said to me, but what else can we do? And we, after that, we just went, oh, try this, try that. And I kept trying. It's like, well, there's nothing I can do now. You stop with it. And she just got used to me after a while.
Jane Allsop, a former head of Haggerston School, Hackney, London.
Because I'm going to use something that I did, but which somebody else commented on and observed, and I was interested that they had. So when I worked as a head teacher in a secondary school, I was on the school gate in the mornings and at the end of the day, most days, not quite every time. And that's to be able to see a lot of the students come in, see a lot of them go, speak to some of them, not just to see them, but be seen by them, to have interactions. And of course, sometimes see some of the adults who were occasionally leaving them at the gate or collecting them. And there was a student who had a physical disability. And this student, I won't even identify gender. This student often spoke to the staff who were on the gate. And on one occasion, they were coming to leave school and their shoelaces were coming undone. And the young person was leaving quite quickly. And as they paused to speak, say something, and I bent down and tied up their shoelaces again. I think it may just have been one shoelace. Continuing to chat at the same time, and the student continued to chat. And I think I probably, over the course of a year or two, did that more than once. But after the first time, sometime later, a colleague commented on it in a meeting, and I knew that that small act of service was meaningful. It was meaningful to me because I wanted to do it. I liked doing it anyway. It was not commented on by the student, by the young person. It was meaningful to other adults who'd seen it. And because of the setting, of course, a number of other people had seen it. And it was a very small thing, but I knew afterwards that that kind of action was an example of love.
Nancy Cunningham, consultant trainer for Meaningful Care Matters.
Okay, an example of being loving in my workplace. I can think of several examples. One of the care homes that I was working in Canada, my father had just passed away, and it had been about 6 months or so. And so I had come to work this day, and I was feeling really down, really sad, and missing him. But I felt that I had to be up and ready and, you know, kind of put on that face to go in and care for some of the people that I was working with. And there was a woman that I had really quite an affection for. She was lovely. She reminded me of my mom, actually. And she had dementia, and she was always quite cheerful and very huggy and, you know, would just love to see people coming. And so she was sitting by herself, and I just went and sat beside her and started to talk with her. And she cupped my face in her hands and looked in my eyes. And she only spoke French, which I know very little of. But I really felt her compassion. She could see I was sad. And then she just wrapped her arms around me and put my head on her shoulder. And she just started to rock and sing to me. Well, I still get emotional when I think of that, because that is exactly what I needed that day. And I didn't get it from my teammates. I didn't get it from, you know, anybody else. I got it from her that day. And that to me is a prime example of how, if we are open, anybody can give us what we need in a moment. Mm. And that's love. Mm.
Harriet, a midwife in the Homerton home birth team in Hackney.
I suppose what popped into my mind about love in midwifery is what I see. So not necessarily the love that I'm giving, but the love that I see between birth partners and partners during labour. Sometimes that is electric, and it makes you go all funny inside looking at a woman and her birth partner together in this swaying, moving, walking around, breathing, sometimes holding, sometimes kissing, not massively, but, you know, there's a lot of love happening in the room when we're there. Not all the time, not all couples do it, but sometimes you get these couples that are completely locked in. And it's very special to be even part of that. And you do feel the chemistry between them. So there's oxytocin flowing because of the baby coming, but there's also a lot of oxytocin flowing between the couple themselves. And that's lovely. And it doesn't have to be the partner. It could be between the mum and her mum, or their sister or a friend. It's often the birth partner, but sometimes it's just truly electric. And I sometimes just look at the other midwife and we do this, you know, like, wow. And this is not after the baby's come out. This is like during labor when it's really intense and they've got that control and they've got that foundation for them to be able to move through this difficult bit when it's really, really intense. And it's beautiful to see. They don't need us to be there for those moments. And it's really, really special.
Nicole Mitchell, a massage practitioner and trainer from Cornwall.
I'll give you an example of a lady that I worked with, and I'm going to call her Jane. And I didn't work with her at this point. She lived in the residential home where I used to go. And everybody was saying, "Oh, don't go near Jane. She's really aggressive today." And I was like, "Oh, okay, thanks for the warning." And I could just see her constantly grabbing out, and everybody's doing this skirt around her. And I just thought, gosh, she's in the middle of this crowded room. But she's isolated as well. So I just remember going up to her and going, "Hello, Jane." And she went, "Oh, hello, dear." Grabbed me in for a kiss. And I went, "I love you. Oh, I love you too." And basically it was about turning the sort of tables around, really, or turning the tables over. It was about taking that risk. And I think all relationships, you take a risk, don't you? So I wasn't, you know, being overtly risky, but I could see she was constantly grabbing out. And she was, you know, to me, she was reaching out for connection. And when people were going and she was grabbing them, I think they were responding in such a way. She was picking up immediately on their And I thought, it's about, hang on, let's break this cycle. And, you know, some of the people looking on just couldn't quite believe that, you know, it was as simple as that. And I just said, well, you know, maybe what we need to do is we need to go in. She can't see well, so she's constantly grabbing out. She can't hear well, so she's constantly grabbing out. But she can pick up on enough of our responses to know whether we're rejecting her or whether we're reaching out and validating her as a person. So that's one way, I think, of working with love is reaching out, really.
Here's Alex Cohen, a disability and long-term conditions educator and activist, and her husband, Lionel Roth.
As a PA user, I can feel when the person loves their job and what they're doing. And that means a lot to me. And that's, you know, that's great. And you asked me what it kind of looks like to me as well. Having a good relationship with my PAs. You know, I laugh with them a lot. We talk about, you know, the current affairs, daily things. We talk about, you know, things, television programs, films, things that have happened in the newspapers. And I know that my PAs greatly enjoy that, as I do.
I think there's a difference in loving the job and loving the person. And loving the work. Yes, so it's a bit like happiness. You know, people say you can't actually go out and get happiness, but you do other stuff, and happiness arises out of what else you do in your life. In some ways, I think love in this context might be, there might be some similarity where, you know, love can arise out of a good and close working relationship with someone. It's contagious. You pick it up. So people that you might be working with or caring for would pick up you loving your job, and that love would kind of arise and be present in that relationship then, or be recognized without it being a personalized kind of connection.
Let's take some time to pause and reflect on these examples of people being loving in their work. What was it like listening to the short stories? How did they make you feel? If you can, write down some of the thoughts and feelings that best describe what it was like listening to these moments of being loving. What did you notice about the examples people shared? What struck you most? What personal experiences of love in your workplace do they remind you of? If you had to share a story of being loving in your work, what would it be? Now, thinking about when you next return to work, what is the simplest act of love that you might be able to do? Write it down. A short account of how it happens, when it happens, and what it looks, sounds, and feels like. Now think of the sorts of things that get in the way of being loving at work, and the sorts of things that promote being loving. These last two questions we'll explore with our team of experts on love in the next podcast. It's easy to talk about being loving, but sometimes it can be much more difficult to walk the talk. There are certainly situations in life and work settings that can help or hinder being loving. Sometimes we need to do something about these things before we can expect to feel the love or keep it alive. Thank you.
Thank you.